Hey there, coffee lovers. Do you want to make your morning cup of Joe something special? Let's talk about Joe Bean Coffee, a gem right here in Rochester. I'm Chris Lindstrom, host of the Food About Town podcast and co-founder of Lunchador. I've been a longtime fan of Joe Bean. Kathy, Dina, and the whole team are passionate about their coffee and this city, and it comes through in every cup of Joe Bean Coffee that I brew at home. Joe Bean has been a part of Rochester for years, over a decade, building lasting community and a sense of belonging for everyone who loves coffee. Next time you need beans, head over to Joe Bean's Roastery at 565 Blossom Road in Rochester or shop online at joebeanroasters.com. Even better, subscribe to Joe Bean's Perpetual Joy and you'll receive freshly roasted beans on your schedule and never be without your favorite coffee. Joe Bean is more than just coffee. It's a community, a commitment, and a cup full of care.
Welcome to Dialed In. I'm Wade Reed.
And I'm Aaron Pescucci.
And this is it officially season three? Oh, and we're joined by producer Chris Lindstrom.
Oh, hi. I'm also here.
He's Chris? Not also here. Vital, integral, part of the Dialed In team. Producer Chris Lindstrom. Is this season three, guys?
I think so.
We're calling this season three.
That's what I want to know.
So we can officially make seasons on the podcast. We can actually designate those.
Let's do it.
Which I think that would be good.
We haven't done this in a minute, and it's a brand new day, and I'm excited about it.
Me too.
I'm excited about it for a couple different reasons, because I feel like I've had some revelations about coffee and how I relate to it lately, but there's also just a ton happening in the world that is about coffee or coffee adjacent.
I was going to say, there is a lot going on.
Just a little bit going on.
I feel like coffee's a cheap headline right now, right? Yeah. Like New York Times, like, why is my coffee prices going up? You know, like, why is the cost of a cup of coffee so high? Like, that stuff is really like driving me crazy. And that's part of the reason I brought what I brought tonight. And hopefully
we'll
get
into. Do people not really put one and one together?
So put one and one together for us, Aaron. Why is our coffee?
So I have this thought that comes up a lot, especially a lot recently because of the world. And that thought is, I don't consider myself extremely overly intelligent.
But you're an intelligent guy.
Sure.
But like,
but then
I think that's a great baseline.
But then I look at the world and like things are happening. And like you said, like people are saying, why is my coffee more expensive? I'm like, did you not just see like what is happening in the news? Like they put tariffs on the world, like not just a few little things, like the world,
the whole planet got tariffs.
What was it? Penguins in some island?
Yeah, there's one. There was an island that was listed on the list of countries that has no human inhabitants currently. Yeah. Just used to be like scientists there studying penguins or something.
Well, I mean, we're telling the penguins, you have to pay your fair share. You have to support us, and you know you can't take advantage of the United States of America.
Stop it!
and that's just it, though. Like, you see tariffs, you have to at least kind of know we don't grow coffee here. Like, you don't go to Wisconsin and see coffee trees, right?
I think the fundamental credit you're giving people that doesn't maybe apply is that they understand that coffee is something you grow at all.
Yes.
Right? Like I don't... I'm the more I'm in this, the more I realize how foreign it is that to people that coffee grows at all, right? And we can get into that. We're getting a little ahead of where I wanted to be right now.
That sounds about right.
But I did bring some receipts about all of this.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to... So along the lines of like, why is it getting more expensive? I don't just want to talk about it. I want to bring like the numbers that I, as a coffee roaster, am dealing with, and mine are like minuscule compared to a lot of people's, and especially a lot of the ones that, you know, make the New York Times headlines. And so, like, I think this small example of like, well, this to me, for me, this is like 20% or 10 to 20%, you know, increase in this one area is if you scale it, it explains the problem, right? We'll get to that.
Yeah, before we get into numbers, how's everybody's break been in between last time we recorded?
I'm fine. It's coffee outside season. Yeah, so yeah. Let's talk about coffee outside. I drink all my coffee on the porch with my son, my 13-year-old son.
Isn't it the
best? Right now, it's
13?
Yeah, 13 and a half.
Oh my God.
Dude.
Wow.
My middle son just turned 8. My youngest is going to be 7 in about a month.
Wow. Like,
yeah. Yeah. Okay,
here's one for you. Just wait another year or two. My son turned 15. You know what I've been hearing about for the last 5 months?
Driving. Wow.
So I was thinking the other day, the driveway was, you know, need to be cleared of the cars, right? And I'm going out there. I'm like, I used to pull the cars out all the time. And I'm like, he's the same age when I was pulling the cars out into the driveway.
Did you let him try?
Yeah. I looked at him. I was like, I got an idea. He goes, what? I go, do you want to back the car out? He goes, yes. And it was, talk about having fear of not having control over anything. That is crazy.
And I hated having my mom in the passenger seat. Like, and I just, I think I'm almost there where I understand. I can't imagine Xander in the driver's seat, and his brothers are
so
maybe even scarier. I don't know. How about, so Chris,
so,
how about
this
you,
relates
Chris?
To
like,
coffee
how's your
outside,
break
though?
Been?
I don't know. It's like, it, like the cycle of doing shows never stops, which is nice because we have some shows that go on break, some that don't. And there's just been, there's been a lot of interesting stuff. DeWolf Brewing's on its way to actually being open and hopefully, you know, a couple months after this posts,
woo-hoo!
Which is super exciting. Been working on that for over 2 years. And
dun, 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 dun.
Yeah,
I don't have a soundboard, need, so.
Yeah.
I was going to reach for one of the buttons, but I don't know which one.
That one. So no, we're so been working on that. And then we're coming up on doing, we have a show in Fringe for Lunch at Or that I'm super excited about. And we're doing a whole bunch of Fringe previews. So, like, I kind of took a break myself. I was struggling for a while and just kind of feeling excited to be doing this again. Tasted some hot sauces recently on an episode.
That was a great episode. That was a great episode.
Yeah, we did.
Seriously.
I did one with Karma Sauce.
That was awesome. I don't watch Hot Ones. I had no idea. That was
excellent. Oh, yeah. And he's like, Gene Olchek is local. He's makes hot sauces and makes a whole bunch of sauces for the Hot Ones show.
Yeah,
which
was just super cool to learn about.
Yeah, and is a real local place, and he's expanded, has a whole like production facility now.
Awesome.
And it's like, it's great to hear those stories. It makes you feel positive about something.
Absolutely.
Which is difficult with everything going on, and difficult when, if you're having a tough time, it's nice to have people around that are doing something good and feeling okay and doing positive things.
Absolutely.
Which is why when you talk about like having coffee outside,
yes,
and just enjoying
being
outside and just relaxing and saying, oh, I can just sit and enjoy coffee, and that can be enough for that minute.
Yeah. So
and
good.
It's an amazing experience.
So can I tell you about my hat?
Oh, please.
Because I'm wearing a very particular hat, and it has me in the coffee outside mood. Yes.
Okay.
How old is this hat, first of all?
Oh my gosh.
I see it's almost
as old as my son.
So if
so
you're
it's probably like 12, 11, 12 years old.
Because if you're listening to this, you need to find the YouTube or wherever this is going to be posted to see this hat. This isn't a new hat he's excited about.
Hudson Whiskey hat. Hudson Whiskey hat, and that's important because it makes it very recognizable.
Okay.
So I used to make coffee outside a lot. It's almost as fun as drinking coffee outside. I would do it predominantly at the Brighton Farmers Market. And I think at this point I was doing it with Fuego at the Brighton Farmers Market. And that was a little bit simpler operation when we did it with Joe Bean. We were doing like single cup pour overs. It was bedlam. It was a nightmare. People just wanted their cups immediately. I totally understand like why Java's and Ugly Duck do it the way they do it at the Brighton Farmers Market
100%.
Now. Because that was terrible. It was a lot simpler at Fuego, and so we got to interact a lot more, which was really nice. And this young woman who worked at the market came up, and she's wearing a Hudson Whiskey hat. I was like, that's a great hat. And she's like, oh, do you want it?
No.
And I'm like... Yeah, I'm like, I don't know. I think I was born for improv because sometimes I just yes and I just don't think about it. I'm just like, yeah. And she takes the hat, this hat off her head and gives it to me. And it's been my hat ever since. And so that's my hat, right?
Yeah.
So then it's like probably 3-4 weeks later, and this, and I'm slinging coffee with Fuego, Brighton Farmers Market. Dude comes up, and he's wearing a black one. So this one's like, it used to be red. It's like worn out pink now. He's wearing this black Hudson Whiskey hat. I'm like, oh, that's so cool. What a great hat. Because I was wearing this hat at that market.
Right.
Again.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, yeah. Did my girlfriend give you that one? I'm like, I don't know, dude. She didn't mention you. It was the most awkward. I was like.
We were outside. We were in a public place.
I guess, like, do you want it back? Like, I did not know. I'm like, bro. I don't think, like, this is really between you and her. Like, yes.
But did he say it as in, like, this was, like, a thing that happened? Or was it, like, I want the hat back?
It was real. He was pretty cagey. He was pretty hard to read. Like, he didn't seem happy about it. But I'm like, dude, I don't.
Did he work for Hudson Whiskey? Like, what?
Maybe. I didn't.
You don't
like,
know?
No. Like, this dude, then he got his coffee and walked away. Like, he was really not excited about me wearing this hat.
Yeah.
And yeah, but it is one of my favorite coffee outside stories. It's like,
that's pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, the twin hats that I apparently interrupted the bond of.
That's funny.
Like,
I mean there's very few things that I wish for more than like that, to have that discussion recorded for when he got home.
Seriously.
So I met your hat. Well, but I saw her at the market every week.
Yeah.
After that. So she was there. I hope he waited till they got home to have that conversation.
Not in the Brighton High School parking lot.
Exactly. Like, you know what that hat meant to me? I don't know. But I love this hat. And honestly, it's a great hat. Like,
yeah.
And whatever, Hudson Whiskey.
Yeah, shout out to Hudson Whiskey, small barrels.
So funny.
Yeah,
it's good stuff.
Yeah. So let's take a quick break and come back and talk about tariffs, because I need a reset now. Like,
all right.
Just thinking about that story.
And we'll be right back. I'm Chris Lindstrom, the host of the Food About Town podcast. If you want to learn more about the Rochester food and drink scene and beyond, with a good dose of nerdery and personal stories on top, then Food About Town is for you. I've been writing and podcasting for over 10 years, and I'm so thankful for all the support from the community. Subscribe to the Food About Town podcast today and hear from the people that make and love the food and beverages you can't stop enjoying.
Welcome back to Season 3 of Dialed In, and we're going to tackle this tariff thing. And like I said earlier, I brought some receipts, and I had sent you all some screenshots just to sort of give you an idea of what it looks like when you're looking at an invoice for green coffee, and you have like a bunch of numbers, and you have like the poundage, and then the price per pound, and then the trucking. The additional carry is a warehouse fee. Like, we had to use space in our warehouse, and we're going to charge you for it. And so there's a lot of just kind of weird extra fees. And then, you know, your total, whatever. This is kind of the story of going from a fairly reasonable price, you know, prices that are in the like high $3 to, you know, low $5 range, just to a steadily much higher price that eventually includes tariffs. And I want to use these to illustrate just how the tariffs have affected us. So I go from one that has.
Hey, Wade, can you give us some context before we jump into this?
Yeah.
How much coffee do you order? How often do you order it?
Yeah.
And, you know, what general areas are you pulling from?
So in order to keep costs, you know, manageable and margins relatively steady, I'm typically ordering my staple coffees, so the ones I use the most of, once a month. And those are mostly coming from Inter-American, so I am going through an importer.
And how much are those? How many pounds?
Right. So that has kind of grown over time. It's
sure.
Fluctuated a little bit to where now I'm probably doing about 900, 1,000 pounds a month.
Okay.
And then those are just the staple coffees, the ones that are much more like interesting. So those are like, this is my baseline. This is, I can, you know, my lowest price to my customers. And then easy to blend, you know, they fit in. They're like they're consistent, sweet, chocolatey, nutty. They're
part of your
coffees.
Core blends.
Yeah. Right. Both of the staple coffees that we're kind of looking at here on these invoices, especially the one marked March, are like, that's the shop blend you're looking at right there. That's those two coffees. So I then spread out more interesting offers. So when I bring in a honey process, a natural, when I bring in something that is like micro lot, like a pink bourbon or this Pacamara that I have, or these Colombians right now that are just phenomenal. I am typically ordering those like once every 3 or 4 months, where I go out and I look for something just really special that I'm trying to fall in love with, that I also think can like bring some color to those blends. So like Locals Only, their Gucci blend always has like something really crazy in it. The Elvio's blend typically gets something like really special in it, because they really want to push like, yes, this is sweet and consistent, but also has this like a nice fruity like note to it. They're really pushing for like what Elvio kind of thinks of as like a third, Elvio and Dan kind of think of as like a third wave blend, right? Like cool. what is unique about third wave coffee, and drawing out some flavors that you wouldn't normally get out of just like a whatever blend, right? So looking at this one, this happens to have like 5 bags on it. And the, you know, the price is significantly lower by pretty much like 1,000.
Are we looking at March here?
Yeah. So looking at March, by almost $1,000, $700-$800 lower than the one in June, which has like one of those kind of more special coffees on it. But neither of these two invoices has anything about tariffs. And it's interesting because we've been talking tariffs since January.
Yeah.
But a lot of the stuff that I bought wasn't tariffed because it was in a warehouse and I had contracted it way ahead of time. So really, the tariffs didn't start hitting till this summer. And so anyone who started ramping up their prices before that was doing so in anticipation of the tariffs. And I think that's an important point, because we can talk about margins. And we can talk about kind of fortifying, you know, yourself and being ready for a big change. But what is the role of someone in my position to protect my customers and not raise the prices until I absolutely have to?
Right.
And what is the role of like, well, it's good business just to be ready for what you know is coming down the pike. That's a really hard question. I think a lot of different roasters are managing it different ways.
Well, and I think it's,
and what we've been, at least what I've been hearing from the consumer side, is that with all the tariff stuff that's going on since, what was it? Day of Freedom?
Yeah.
Freedom, that like businesses have been having a heck of a time trying to figure out and plan, because things keep changing all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are probably some businesses where you are like signing different contracts for imported goods more frequently than you would my particular model of buying green coffee.
Sure.
So I, you know, I can look back at all the way up to June, there's no tariff prices listed on my coffees. But then when July hit, and you can very clearly see there's the kind of the same line items. There's like, this is the amount of coffee. This is how much it costs per pound. This is the trucking. And then there's an extra line item, and it really specifically says tariffs.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And the trucking, and the trucking went up a little bit too, which is, the trucking has been actually really interesting. It fluctuates a ton. Oil prices are really inconsistent.
Mm-hmm.
And so that gets felt downstream. And then you get hit with, you know, this tariff ends up being 5% to me, right? About 5% of my total cost. Am I doing my math there right?
Yeah.
Maybe a little less.
Sure. I mean, which, to be honest, is like really easy compared to a lot of other ones that are going on. Like a 5% tariff right now is like you're skating by at 5%.
Well, and that's my understanding is that this particular importer is absorbing some degree of the, some extent of the cost.
Right.
Right.
Like, so the fact that you're paying 5%, I know, like, Carrie's last pin order, like, she got in the lower time, which was 15 or 20% higher than just from the tariffs that she had to pay, because she's actually paying for that on the fly.
Right.
As things go. And it's, it changes the entire, changes the entire profit structure of a business
entirely.
Well, and you know, for people, as we were talking about, this has always been marketed in the media these days as tariffs from the other countries. Like the other countries, like Guatemala is supposed to be paying this, is, I have to believe, what a lot of people think these days.
Yeah.
And the truth is, no, it's Wade, your local roaster guy, who's supplying, you know, restaurants with coffee, and he's the one who has to decide who's going to deal with it. Like, are you going to suck it up, or is, am I going to go to, you know, Ugly Duck and see my cup of coffee rise a dollar?
And well, that's,
and then you also have the fact that, like, right now you are some, you are actually lightly insulated from it.
Right.
Because your distributor is absorbing part of that. And that's a great thing. But the question is, how long can the distributor float that part of it? And then when are you going to see the full brunt of it?
Well, I mean, even on the next invoice, so this last one I just paid in August.
Yeah.
Yep.
It goes up. It's, you know,
you're up
as there. As a percentage of the original tariff, it's almost 30.
Yeah.
Of the original, of the original tariff. So now what are we? Let's do a quick calculation here.
Yeah, it seems close percentage wise to what it was before, but like that's, in a lot of the countries we're talking about,
yeah, it's still 5%.
A lot of them have significantly higher, like the lowest that are around right now are like 10 or 15% on just about any country.
And that's pretty those much are our what friends. I'm looking at here.
Right. Those are our friends that are 10, 15%. And then many of them are way, way, way worse. And some of the countries that you're, that coffee is sourced from are not on the friends list.
Costa Rica's on the, so like I just started bringing in this new Costa Rica that's on the 30% list, I think.
Yeah.
So that's kind of baked in here too. And I want to address kind of a couple of things with this. First, to what you said, Eric, there are too many Erics.
I wish I was Eric sometimes. Wow.
My boss's name is Eric and one of my new clients' name is Eric. Aaron, you're talking about like who pays for tariffs.
Yeah.
Have you seen this, it's almost become a meme where the administration put out like the tariffs have raised $100 billion. Who says tariffs don't work, right?
I haven't seen this.
You haven't seen this?
No.
This was like an actual press release from the administration. It's like, we've raised $100 billion. It's like, from us.
Yeah, you've taken it from your taxpayers.
Right. You're either taking it from the businesses or the people directly. One of the two. Like, that's right, the only place they're coming from.
China is not writing the government a check for 50%. There's no $100 billion. Like,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So China, you sold us $32,000. So yeah, we would like $16,000 in tariffs, please.
And that's, I mean, that, like, I can, I'm obviously not, we're not looking at numbers that stack up to $100 billion. But when you scale this to, like, some of the large, even, like, a mid-sized coffee operation where I'm, like, nano or maybe I'm reaching micro some months. Like, if you went to,
I mean, just even think about McDonald's and the amount of coffee they have to buy.
Sure, sure.
Like, that's not a small number that they're going to have tacked on to all of their purchases.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the other thing, kind of more to what Chris said about, you know, there are countries, you know, there's like a range, like 10% is kind of the baseline. Costa Rica's at 30%. Like, probably the scariest sentence I've heard from an importer lately was when I was ordering that Costa Rica. I was moving off of a Brazil and I was like, I want something that's comparable to that Brazil. He's like, yeah, it's a really good thing you're moving off that Brazil because the 50% Brazils land next month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
50%.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, we have to support our good friend Jair Bolsonaro, who's, you know, a humanitarian, has done great work for the people of Brazil. And
for those of you who don't know, like, this dude literally, like, tried to lead a coup after he was ousted in a free and fair election. Well, an election as free and fair as they get in Brazil, right? Like, I mean, did basically what, you know, some people kind of wanted to try to do here was
stop whining.
Right. So, like, not the greatest guy. And it's because he's on trial, apparently, that we have the phrase 50% Brazils made it into my life and chilled me to the bone.
Oh,
like,
for sure. And which, I mean, many core blends people use are Brazilian. Yeah. It's one of the, you know, it's the second biggest coffee producer in the world or biggest.
It's one of the biggest. Still the leader. Still
it's either biggest or second. So it's like, it's huge and it affects the industry more than people understand because they don't think about Brazilian coffee that much. But like a lot of the commodity coffee that is produced is Brazilian, and many of the large companies, you know, McDonald's and those, all those other ones have a lot of Brazilian coffee inside all of those things.
Absolutely. Like,
it's going to affect.
And as that price goes up, you know, it's going to affect the market. Now the C market jumped over $4 at one point, which for most of our life, it's been under $2. Sometimes it's been under $1, which is criminal. And like, so technically this is like better, but it's the absolute better for some growers, right? Growers who have access to the C market, but.
Right. And that would be the commodity market for coffee, which is commodity coffee.
Yeah.
It's the biggest
volume.
It's
not graded necessarily. It's not separated necessarily, except sometimes by Arabica and Robusta, right? It's a very bare supply and demand calculation. How much coffee do we have? How many buyers do we have? It's the sort of thing Wall Street can bet on, right? So it's subject to like futures and speculation and all the micro trades that AI are, you know, ruining our banking system with now. So it's the commodities market has traditionally also been a place where the cost of production doesn't factor in at all. It's just, can you produce coffee? And if X amount of coffee can be produced and Y amount of coffee can be sold, this is the price of it. And it's a terrible tool for the West to exploit growers. And now it's coming back to bite us where, you know, like between climate change, between certain blights, between certain things, you know, going up and down. And now this really crazy price ride we're on with tariffs, it's not affordable anymore. Like some of my better coffees used to be $4 coffees, and now that's the baseline.
Right. And now we're going to see that. We are going to see the effect of it. And I think there has been a buffer that has occurred. And I think we're going to see a notable price hit if they
continue. Already seen it locally. I went to Mellow the other day, and you know, I typically get some sort of a latte, some sort of flavored latte, whether it's lavender or vanilla or whatever. Typically been somewhere between six, you know, within the last couple of years, closer to seven something, right? I did a double take because it was over eight. Like, and I'm not the jerk who's going to be like, what are you talking about? It's $8, but like, that's crazy now.
Yeah. And like, I think, you know, go out to LA, go out to New York City, like Chicago, like these are markets that have been absorbing $10 for years. And, you know, it kind of sounds like a cliche at this point, but like, you know, here we are. Here, this is where it's inevitably been leading. And so,
yeah, there's no doubt.
I don't know when the fever breaks.
I mean, here's the thing that I've noticed. Every time we go through a period of inflation, every time we go through some sort of major economic change that like these tariffs are causing at this moment, things don't seem to drop at a certain point. Like the cost of eggs is still high. It's going to be high.
Yeah.
And so like people are going to get used to paying $7, $8, $9 for a latte at some point. And the stores are going to be like, they're paying it. So why are we going to drop the price again? And so I don't know if you agree that this might like continue to raise the price of everything, but like that's been my experience with a lot of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, deflation after a period of inflation is not something that typically occurs because it is, as soon as there's deflation, then like the panic that occurs in the financial markets is, like we think like recession actions are drastic. Sure. Like if there's actual deflation, like the actions that will be taken are more drastic than we've seen in the last, you know, the last certain amount of years. Like the efforts that like Japan has gone through from stagflation to actual like reduction in GDP. The efforts they're going are drastic because they're, you know, they're edging on like collapse in many ways that we're going to start seeing in similar ways if things actually deflate, because our entire system is based on constant growth forever.
Yeah.
And that includes the ability for people to not work until they die. Right. That right. is the entire system is based on constant growth forever. And if you can't afford to take care of the older people because there's not constant growth behind them, the whole system collapses.
Yeah.
Which is why you never see like actual deflation, because they won't, you can't let it deflate because the whole system collapses, which means the people that get hurt in the interim are the ones where their wages don't keep pace, which they haven't, you know, for the last 30 to 40 years, our entire lifetimes,
yeah,
where wages have not kept pace through inflation, in a drastic way.
And I mean, yeah, you economics. Get to the inevitable results of all of this. I mean, like what?
This goes back to what is a tariff, right?
Yeah.
That we just had a mini Econ 101 lesson.
Yeah.
It's like, a what tax. Is, what is the end game?
Yeah. That's, end game
what
is.
What is the end game?
End rich game is richer. Less affordable everything.
And yeah. So we're going down a really specific rabbit hole here.
Yeah.
I do want to quick shout out the National Coffee Association, because the National Coffee Association did petition the administration for a coffee exemption to the tariffs. And I was following that story for a little bit, but I haven't seen the latest. I mean, they're the ones who ended up kind of publicizing the whole coffee caucus in Congress that I think we mentioned maybe on a previous episode.
I think we did.
So,
yeah.
It was the last one, I think.
Yeah. So something to look into there and something to support. So if you do want to find out the state of advocacy on this issue, go to ncausa.org, and there is under their news page just some updates on like their letter, their petition, and their relationship with the Coffee Caucus. So let's take one more quick break, and then let's just introduce the Starbucks thing, because obviously, I mean, when you're talking coffee, you got to be talking Starbucks, and we'll save the meat of that one for next time.
Sounds good. We'll be right back.
Hi there, this is Magnus of The Mind of Magnus, a show dedicated to help expanding the mind that I have in this big skull of mine. I've grown up with the love of factoids and curious about the world, so I'm taking the time to interview all the most amazing people I've met. So join me for The Mind of Magnus. You can find it at magnusapollo.com. And if you have a guest, you want to be a guest, you want to learn more about what's going on in this world, please join me here on the Lunchador Podcast Network.
So yeah, Wade, if you want to get a house, don't buy a TV. It's fine.
No, buy a couple TVs and then sell them at a 50% tariff.
Don't buy 1,000 TVs.
Yeah, that was the continuation of our offline conversation.
That's my real vice. I have to buy a TV every week.
Brand new you watch it once and you buy a new TV.
Not going to lie. You know what people... I was doing a lot of like budget research for a while. You know what people were saying was the cause of people not being able to afford things?
Avocado toast.
Too many lattes.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Too many lattes.
Too many lattes.
Make your coffee at home, which I advocate, by the way. Do. Like it is a lot cheaper, actually.
Well, it is a delight.
But also, like, it's really nice to get out and see friends and make friends with your local baristas and your local coffee places. Just don't spend your money at the place we're about to talk about. Don't spend your money at Starbucks.
Well, can we talk real quick before we get to Starbucks? I was reading, I know we hate the waves thing.
Yeah, I'm over it.
You're over it. Yeah. But I came across an ad that was talking about the fourth wave of coffee being home brewing.
Because that's never existed.
No, but like, it made a little bit of sense to me just in the fact that like, we have so much more access to specialty coffee, even though it's costing us dramatically more at this point.
Hmm.
But like we were just saying, like a TV now is pennies from what it used to be. You can get an espresso machine for roughly the same price as it was 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
And I think I forget if it was, I read the article, an article like that. And I think somebody, it might've been a James Hoffman video where they were talking about like how coffee, how the progression of like the new changes in what can, what coffee maxing be.
Yeah.
Is not coming from the industry as much as it used to. It's coming from home enthusiasts.
Yeah.
And I think it's plus and minus. It's both.
Yeah.
But I think the fact that things can come from home enthusiasts is one of the new changes that has occurred from, hey, home equipment is way better than it used to be.
Definitely. And I don't want to yuck anyone's yum if you're a home barista. Like, I'm glad you enjoy what you enjoy, but sometimes I watch those reels.
Yeah.
And like how they take 2 to 3 minutes to prepare the shot. And it drives me crazy. And I'm like, it can't be that much better than what I know baristas at AMFM are doing and turning things over six times as fast.
I think that's the same thing though, is like when like we know chefs, right? Chefs. It's the huge difference between you can spend all day preparing a complicated meal at home and you can make an astonishing meal, but you've spent 6 hours doing that all of that day. And then you expect that in 15 minutes at your favorite restaurant.
Exactly.
Or 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's, I think that's the fascinating part, is you can have an amazing, you can be an amazing home cook. That doesn't mean you can be a chef.
Sure.
Amazing home coffee maker, right? You can be an astonishing, like high-end espresso maker. You can spend thousands and thousands of dollars and make astonishing home coffee. It doesn't mean you could work a shift local coffee shop.
Let me bring this up for you. So I've been debating getting an espresso machine.
Same.
My thought is, I'm debating getting a Gaja Classic.
Mm.
You can roughly get them for under $500, we'll say. So I get a machine for under $500. I get a medium, maybe low grade espresso grinder, and I can make something decent to good at home, right?
Yeah.
You know, for the days that I want to do that. So I've been on the Gaja Classic Reddit forum, and this post came up that like epitomizes what is going on right now.
Oh, I'm intrigued.
So this guy posts a photo. By the way, if you know who you are and you are listening to this, I do not think less of you, dude. So let's just put this out there.
Where is this going?
Well, first of all, he goes, bought an Gaja E24 about 11 days ago. I'm using remineralized RO water brought up to a TDS of 45 ppm. I did not do any back flushing until last night, and I did 3 lengthy Cafeza back flushes using a full teaspoon of Cafeza each time. Purchased this from Amazon. I've already initiated a return. He's had it 11 days. Okay, it keeps going. If no one can help me avoid this hassle, my first espresso machine, and I wanted it to last for many years, and that's why I bought the Gaja E24. So this guy has had an espresso machine, probably never pulled a shot before 11 days ago, and is already complaining about a soggy puck. That's what this is all over.
Are you outside of your mind?
Okay.
That's so, the machine's fault?
Well, and that's just it. We have this massive knowledge that people are going through, and then they think that it's just going to fall into place. He did all the right things. He has remineralized RO water. Who and would have done that?
Like, you spend all that time remineralizing water,
right?
Instead of learning the basics.
Yeah.
And I think that's... I think that's kind of where, wait a second. This is the pivot. Listen to this, guys.
Go for it.
This
Go.
Is a good one.
I can't wait.
We're spending all this time not learning the basics instead of just enjoying really good coffee. And then there's the whole other side of the world of coffee that so many people drink and don't understand that there's other good stuff out there, but it changes how everybody interacts with coffee in the world.
And has a way bigger impact than we'll ever. Well, not ever, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe.
Well, and but then the other thing that comes up too is, so he goes talking about this, right? And so somebody asked him like a basic question. He goes, "Oh, I think your grind is too fine." Like that's the answer, most likely, right?
Sure.
Okay. He goes, "Yeah, but I've been single dosing using a funnel. I do WDT in four layers from bottom to top. I have a spring-loaded 30-pound self-leveling tamper and no sprays or offshoots pulling off." Like,
dude, that's painful.
We need to go
that's
after.
That's what I'm talking about. He made one of the reels I hate. I promise you.
Like, they're so, like, think of the dollars for
yes.
all
yeah.
of that equipment.
Yeah.
Like, one, like, all of that sub-equipment and, like, getting the RO water and doing all that other stuff, the cost of all of that is more than the machine
but it's
that,
also
that
like,
he has.
But it's also like, dude is upset about a soggy puck. What does your coffee taste like?
Right. That was what I was super excited right? to see somebody posted. Somebody immediately was like, "Well, is the coffee good?" And that's when he went into more details about everything else.
Yeah. But it's all that, right? All those tech things doesn't mean anything if the coffee isn't good.
All the resources in the world.
Yeah.
You could be a Starbucks and yeah. have billions of dollars at your disposal. And make something that,
oh,
from a sensory perspective.
Yeah, frozen.
He scrolled down again. Aaron scrolled down again.
It gets even better.
We have lost Aaron down the depths of Reddit posts.
This is
wait
just
a second.
This is a new.
Reddit.
This has got to be a new segment. Block D.
Shit, partner.
All right. So, does it taste good? Right.
Okay.
So. They're way down, he goes, "Okay, everyone. To everyone asking if the espresso tastes good, my palate has no freaking clue very much anyway. I got into this because I love lattes and refuse to pay Starbucks anything it could be avoided.
Great.
I do taste the shots, but I don't really have much clue other than that."
Then just do that. If that's your only goal, what difference does the puck make? I don't, what?
So
prestige.
I love that. That's the ending of this.
The sleight of hand is
like you wanted to make stuff that you liked at Starbucks, and you're buying like, you know, puck prep and all that equipment to make something with all that effort that you could just buy a super automatic.
Seriously,
just buy the Breville super automatic that does a fine job.
It's not bad.
Gaja has a super automatic.
Right, just buy
the button ones.
Right, buy a fine one that does the grinding and makes the thing for $1,000, and you will be more than happy. Like, don't waste your time learning all this stuff.
My palate has, like, you know, like, then you, mission accomplished, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what I don't get. Like,
yeah.
Home baristas are a puzzle for me, because I'm like, you have so much enthusiasm, except that it's really just you trying to generate clout.
You're showing off
on Reddit,
yeah,
on Instagram, on TikTok, on where, like, to your friends, like,
which is why I haven't bought an espresso machine, because you know what I like doing? I
like people.
I like going to the shop,
yeah,
to see people, and I brew coffee at home by hand, and that's enough because I know. The obsessive weirdo-ness in my head will never be able to say I did good enough.
Right.
And with somebody who does have reasonable taste and knows what good is.
Yeah.
I know that for me to be okay with what I have would be a problematic setup. Right. And I know the
you
kind
need
of nerdery.
To go to that level. Right.
Yeah. I mean, to a point, right.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to do as much as even that guy was doing. And I would feel like I would never be okay with where I got.
Yeah.
And knowing that I can be happy going to a place and analyzing that and not judging those people too harshly,
sure,
because they're in a production environment.
Yeah.
That makes me very happy. Yeah. Like that makes me content. Like
it keeps you more satisfied that way. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Instead of
me chasing it to death. Because I know where the road lies.
But do you not have like that reasonable expectation thing? Like, here's like the example. We were out today. Caden had to retake a Regents exam. And we needed to stop and get coffee. And so I had a Tim Hortons gift card. I don't like Tim Hortons.
But you have a gift card.
But I have a gift card.
Sure.
I know I'm not getting a, you know, Proud Mary pour over, you know, that's going to have like blueberry notes and strawberry notes at the same time and blow my mind. But I'm going to get it. I'm going to drink it. It's going to be okay. You know, it's going to give me a little bit of that like 36,000 coffee essence flavors, you know.
I think that's where I diverge is my taste is I will have coffee when I have to have coffee if I can't get something I like.
Road trip.
I would rather suffer not having coffee than for as long as I can handle it rather than stop for something like that.
If I'm on a road trip, I drink whatever.
Right, I will also prep.
Yeah, that's
other than that, though.
Like when we went on our last trip, we bought a case of the Joe Bean cans.
Yeah,
we bought a case.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we bought a case, and we brought all of our coffee for the trip with us, so I never had to worry about not having something I like. Like,
sure,
I will do that level of prep.
Sure.
To prevent having to support, you know, companies that get special treatment, like our friends, like our Green Mermaid friends.
Are we trying one more time?
That was my pivot. Yes. Right, so this is pivot number three.
We are trying one more time to get to.
I'm not going to say anything.
What we had planned to talk about. Which we're just introducing this topic, so we can spend the time. And I want to say that I don't own a home espresso machine because sometimes I hate espresso.
Yeah.
And right now, I hate espresso. Anyway, that's for another time. I'm becoming one of those guys who's like, I drink more bad espresso than good espresso, and I'm tired of it. Anyway.
Another one.
No.
Another one.
No. I don't want another bad espresso. So I want to talk about Starbucks because we've talked about Starbucks a few times here. We've talked about their labor practices. We've never really gone into their support for some really terrible things going on around the world, but that's pretty much the reason I don't drink Starbucks right now. And if you know, you know what I'm talking about. And if you don't, figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Starbucks is, we've talked previously, you know, pivoting to becoming more of a third place and getting back to that root of their identity. And they want to believe that is like the whole root of their identity, but that is really just kind of one aspect of what made them Starbucks. What really made them Starbucks was good branding and like convenience, the ability to open enough locations to be convenient for everyone, right?
Well, and they brought something that was kind of niche, a little less niched for people.
Right. And you would think that if convenience was your model and if kind of turning something niche into mass market was your model, you would have a lot of success with opening a bunch of stores that where it's like you can order online ahead, you can show up and pick up only places where you don't sit inside, right?
Sure.
You'd be wrong because it turns out Starbucks is set to close 80 to 90 locations that are pickup only, pickup Starbucks. Starbucks pickup, I think is what they're called. And they're completely moving away from this model in their effort to become kind of that community space, that third place. And I can't figure it out.
One of these at all?
Because
I can't think that I've seen one.
I wonder Starbucks how many of them are up in high volume locations.
Right. Isn't there a thing where you can travel New York City? You can travel Manhattan end to end. Just
yep.
traveling from Starbucks to Starbucks, just line of sight.
We did so it
some
in Boston.
Of those, some of those have to be like pickup locations,
I imagine it's
right?
those and then like in not even strip malls, but like the locations that are just in high traffic areas like malls
yeah.
or
yeah.
like, you know, the ones that are, you know, essentially
indoor markets,
kiosks,
airport kind of
ones. Yeah, you know, so. I imagine some of those are those kind of locations too, but I imagine a lot of them are essentially like, you know, the closet locations in New York and Chicago and Miami. And
because like you can sit at the Starbucks in Target.
Yeah.
Crying out loud. Like,
oh, that's true. Yeah.
Right. They have seating even there. So like, yeah, it is hard to imagine that this exists, but
I do love the Starbucks blue ices that you can get there. You know, the blue and red ices you can get there.
I don't know what you're referring to. I'm sorry.
When I was a kid,
boycotted both of these brands.
Yeah. So when I was a kid, it may be not even been Target. It was one of the other department stores.
Okay.
Where you could walk in and get popcorn and like.
Oh yeah.
Blue
yeah.
and red
yes.
like
you could
slushies
always
or
get
ices.
Popcorn at department stores.
That wasn't
yes.
JCPenney, yep. was it?
No. I think it was like Hills or Ames or one of those.
It couldn't
like,
have been either of those because we didn't have those in the Midwest. And I know what you're referring to.
Yeah.
It might have.
And it could have been
JCPenney kind
of thing. It
could have
been early Target too.
Yeah, yeah.
But where you could walk in and they had like, you know, hot dog rollers, old school stuff.
No, it was Target.
Yeah, you could walk in and get that stuff. So I assume Starbucks now sells blue and red ices.
They well at the
best thing they make.
The Penfield one, they do.
That would be awesome.
What?
At the Penfield one, you can get an icy there. And
oh,
it's,
I love that.
And you made me remember because like they used to have that little snack area right when you walked in, and it's gone now. And there's a Starbucks in there.
Oh, give me some nacho cheese. Yeah, let's do that.
So,
by the way, Gemini says this is me using AI, guys.
Oh, I thought you were talking about horoscopes for a second.
Nope, Gemini, my Google friend here. We're gonna get married soon.
Not your Pisces friend. No.
No. Dense urban areas, airports, and hospitals.
That makes
sense.
Hospitals. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I would just think that a brand that has built itself on convenience, this would have been slam dunk
for sure.
And the fact that they're just completely downsizing them, scaling back from them.
But would you say they really built their brand on convenience?
Yes.
Because I can't
believe
it's
mass market. It's being as big as possible.
Yeah, but that's just wanting to make money.
Well, I mean,
I don't
they
think
are...
so. I think it's wanting to be the place that like is the most accessible, is on your commute. I mean, that was the reason.
Yeah.
The period of my life when I drank Starbucks the most is because it was next to the train station I used when I was going to the north suburbs of Chicago for school.
Yeah, but I don't think I don't think their goal was to be ultra convenient. That was their marketing. That was their business model almost was for growth. Was we're going to put stores where they are convenient, but we're still going to give you the highest quality product.
I don't think Starbucks has a quality product.
Sure.
There, I said it.
Right. I think they had the original aspirations, let's say earlier on, of being that.
They want their product to have an identity.
Yeah.
Yep.
I believe they totally do. Which is more than you can say for...
Right. Some. I think we can distinctly separate now from the start. And now is a very different place, right? It's irrelevant what the original intent was, because where they are now is roughly 15,000+ locations in the U.S. alone.
Yep.
Just in the U.S. That's got to be, you know, we want to catch people on their commute. We want to catch people, you know, their walk home or across the street from their apartment, right? Like
you can't quality max 15,000 locations in the U.S.
No. But they try.
Well,
that's why they put in all their super auto machines, because it's like McDonald's. They
consistency,
want you to be. Yep.
I don't.
Consistency is
not quality.
But that's like I think we can marvel at consistency from a scientific and technical standpoint, without saying I separate the two. Consistency is not quality. Consistency is consistency, right? Like,
sure.
The consistency of macro breweries is astonishing, right?
Absolutely.
The consistency of the Budweiser you get here versus the one brewed on the West Coast, brewed in the center of the U.S., like, is astonishingly consistent. It's remarkably the same.
Absolutely.
That is a scientific marvel at that level of production, that you can maintain that level of consistent flavor over time. That is an amazing accomplishment. And Starbucks is an astonishingly consistent place, right? They're consistently taking, you know, taking advantage of their workers. They're consistent. I was waiting for this. They're consistently making coffee that the people that go there want to buy. And that is what they do.
And I can tell you their coffee tastes the same single time.
But I would say that even that is a matter of convenience.
Yes.
But yeah, I don't, and I think that this for was sure. This closing of these 90 stores, what I find most interesting about it is I bet you all of their customers don't care that much. No. I wonder if the major issue here is that they can't complain about something, right?
I'm sure that's part of it.
I mean, I guess then I'm assuming that there's no one in the store. Like, there's got to be people in the store unless we got these robots going there.
No, it's going to be two workers and an abandoned...
At most, yeah. One to take orders and one to make drinks or to punch the buttons on the machines.
Right. It's going to be two workers in a store. But, you know, the only reason they're closing is they're not making profit. That's the only thing, or not making the level of profit they demand. Right. There's no reason they're not closing stores if they're making the profit they expect.
How did they exist? Bad at everything. Well that's how I feel.
When you're moving a cruise ship, right? When you're turning a ship the size of Starbucks, every move is going to have repercussions. Right? You can't make a win-win move when you're that big. Right? There's always a loss because you have to, almost by definition, have a loss. Right? When, you know, the pandemic hit, they went to everybody's online ordering. You can online order everywhere and you can do any customization. And it burned their baristas to the ground, right? Yep. Because they were getting insane orders. And then, you know, all the trends happened. So what was the response? Simplify, do less. But all at the same time, when the demand for online ordering was crazy, what did they open? Stores with no seating because people didn't want to go sit down anywhere.
Sure.
And now they over-respond, and then they're going to close all that stuff, and then they'll close more, and then they're going to find that there's too much demand in locations, and they're going to open more.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter because these are fungible. These are irrelevant. Closing 100 stores is less than it's a drop in the bucket. Right? It means nothing to them to close 100 stores.
Yeah, which I think officially puts me over the edge with this company.
Yeah.
Where I'm like, you know, you treat your workers the way you treat your workers, you're union busters on global issues, you're just pathetic. And now you're showing us you're not good at convenience, you're not good at being a third place, you're not good at coffee, like you're not good at quality coffee. Consistency is not quality. Like what is Starbucks good at?
Well, they're good at producing a thing that
convincing their shareholders of something.
Yeah.
Right?
There's that, and I mean, let's be honest, Starbucks is a status symbol. Like, if
is it let's still?
Say, yeah.
I think because, so. Because I don't like it.
It's I mean, originally it was expensive to start with, right? People weren't going out and bringing lattes to work. If you were like down the road from one of these early specialty places that was doing it, right? And you start walking into work with that 20-ounce latte with the green with the green siren on it, and everybody knows, oh, he's got a nice drink. He's got the nice latte coffee.
He's a fancy man.
And then they're like, what is that? Oh, that's Starbucks. Oh, it's $7.50 for a cup of coffee now? Like,
yeah.
So now everybody knows that person walking into work every day with a $7.50 coffee, they've got to have the money for that.
I think it's also become a default now. It's a default. It's not. I think people don't consider it a status anymore. It's the same as people consider it a convenience. So it's the same as anything else. But I think what we wanted to leave with, because we're coming up on our time.
Yeah, definitely.
Was like a preview for what's.
Oh, yes.
For our
so,
conversation coming up.
So a Starbucks recently opened in Rochester on Park Ave. And when I say recently, you know, year or two.
Yeah. It's been there a while.
Yeah. And it is it's a full location. It has seating. And, you know, it's like all glass facade. So like you can see in there, it is like nice seating. Like it looks like a third place. And, you know, the label on the outside that says Starbucks aside, you could mistake it for like a decent coffee shop, right? Like the place you might want to hang out.
And there's a lot of space inside.
It's a lot of space. It used to be a laundromat. So, you know, where you used to have all the, machines, you've got places to hang. So, the reason this is intriguing to us is because of something that Colin, the owner of Montgomery Court, actually posted, where he drew attention to the fact that the city let Starbucks open that location on Park Ave with full seating, ton of seating, so much space inside, and it's just covered in chairs. And you can, if you're Starbucks, you show up on Park Ave, you can have what you want. When Montgomery Court opened, they had plans to completely renovate the front of the building they're in. It's a corner building on the other end of Park Ave, and they were going to put in some really nice seating. They put in, I think, initially some booths and stuff. Like, it was a pretty good setup for like an independent third wave shop. And the city has clamped down on them super hard. I don't know if it's health. I think it's Department of Health. And it might be a building thing. I look forward to talking to Colin about it, where they can only have like 6 seats. And I've heard of this before too, up on North Winton. Angela at Pandemonium, who's been on our show, you know, friend of the pod, is that what we call her?
I would
friend
say
of
the so. Pod, friend Angela. Of the pod.
She has the same restriction.
I have a guess, but I'm really interested, one, to meet Colin and talk to him about...
We're talking to him in 2 weeks. And yeah. That'll probably be published, you know, in about a month.
Yeah, to talk to him about that. I'm really excited to learn about it. I have a guess. I'm not sure it's a sane way of managing coffee shops and businesses that are serving a specific community area to restrict them in this way. But I have a guess on what it is. And my guess is it's residential zoning, or roughly it's not in a commercial area. And that Park Ave is more commercially
mixed
zoned.
Use. Yeah. Well,
or mixed use.
Yeah, it's got to be mixed use at least.
However it's zoned.
Yeah.
My guess is that coffee shop is not zoned for the same amount of volume. And same with Pandemonium, because it's not like that area, as much as it is now growing, probably isn't zoned the same as Park Ave.
How funny too, because it's obviously been mixed use forever. I used to live in an apartment above that building.
Yeah. this is purely a guess. But that's my guess of what the situation is. But I'm really intrigued.
I think you're probably on.
Can we try, before that show, we should try and get the zoning for it.
I'm sure we can figure it out.
Yeah, that could be.
That stuff's easily navigated on the city's website.
I think it'll be a really interesting conversation, because these things do matter. And these are the things, like, we can debate the ethic. We can talk about the ethics of coffee. We can talk about sourcing. We can talk about our personal taste. But as coffee's changing in our city, right? And coffee has expanded in a rapid way in our city, and we've had debates on and off the air about that. But I think what we can say for sure is, just like when breweries popped up in towns and areas that became locals' spots, that's what these shops are. These are not big, like, these aren't tourist shops. These aren't bringing in people from outside. These are serving the people of their neighborhoods.
Well, here.
This is serving, like, Montgomery Court is not supposed to serve the entirety of Rochester. They're meant to serve the people in that immediate area as the core. And yes, other people need to come in, but that's the idea. They're supposed to serve their neighborhood.
Here, let me chime in, though. All right, so this is his post, okay? It still blows my mind that Starbucks was allowed to open on Park Ave with no problem. Meanwhile, the city limits us to 6 indoor seats and buries us in red tape. Sorry, the low light is killing my eyes here, guys. At the same time, the city of Rochester features us in tourism promos and social media like we're a local success story.
Yeah.
So this will be super interesting.
Yeah, I can't wait.
I think that's a great tease for next time.
It's really something to look forward to.
Well, let's close out for today. Aaron, any plugs for where people can find whatever you're thinking about right now?
Oh, I mean, AaronPascucci.com has been revamped for like a 6th time. It's got some new photos up there. Trying to push my comfort level with photography. So if you find me on Instagram, I'm trying to get in people's faces on the street now and get some neat photos without being a jerk.
good goals.
You know, yeah. Like there's a lot of great people in Rochester, but it's that whole concept of you pull a camera on someone's face and you never know what's going to happen. So, and if you tell them first, hey, can I take your photo? You ruin whatever photo you were going to get.
Ah.
So.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a fun exercise. Wait.
Yeah. So I do want to plug our Instagram, Dialed In Coffee Culture. We'll be, as part of season 3, I definitely want to post more thoughts there. Like I said, my relationship to coffee and drinking coffee and the experience of coffee is changing a lot. You know, like I hate espresso right now, things like that. And also Aporia Coffee Co. on Instagram is a place you can find me, or just aporiacoffee.com. If you're looking for what I'm up to, that's pretty much where to find it. I'm not real great, not real consistent with posting, but we're working on it.
Nice. And if you want to find fine podcasts all over Rochester, check out the Lunchador Podcast Network on lunchador.org. Hopefully you check out one of our friends in the local coffee industry on their show Common Thread, Rory Van Grohl and his friend Greg Benoit from Irondequoit Public Library are doing a show about their experience growing up in the hardcore music scene, interviewing people in the community. I say I've been really enjoying listening to that. So if you want to hear stories about, you know, Rory as a person, not just the owner of Ugly Duck, it is really fascinating stuff. I think they're doing a great job, and I'm thrilled they're part of the network. So go check out Common Thread. I think you'll enjoy it. And that's this episode of Dialed In. Gentlemen, we'll see you next time.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
Now that Aaron's complained about low light in the studio, I guess I have to put more giant sunlights in here so he can read his phone.
Just need glasses.